got here? Which one?
On the left, the phone.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you today?
Joe, how's it going?
Peter McIndurfer.
Good morning, Joe. So,
is that Amanda?
Yes, it is. How are you?
Hi, thanks. This is weird. I've never met you people. I've done this in King County before, where I kind of been to the room and kind of knew my way around, but kind of wanted to come up, but it was going to take me like 4 years to get there. Getting on plane. So.
No worries.
I appreciate you guys offering this to me. I know you said you can do it all the time, but I appreciate it.
No, yeah, not a problem. So we're just going to jump right into the hearing.
Sure.
So today is October 31st. The time is now 8:59. We're going to start with petition number BE 2019-32, parcel number 113120211. The owner is Syngenta Seed. We have Joe Lanzone, which is Ryan LLC, representing them by phone. This is a commercial property. The petition is scheduled for 30 minutes. The appellant and the appraiser will each have 10 minutes to highlight points of the evidence they have provided. The last 10 minutes will be for rebuttal and for questions from the board. Also, I want to let you know we do have our appraiser, Assessor, excuse me, Peter McIndurfer, and representing the assessor's office as well as Nikki Morgan here today.
Hey, Peter.
How are you today?
Good.
Good.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, you bet.
Good morning. Welcome to the Franklin County Board of Equalization. The board members are Gregory Garcia, Joe Chris, and me, Alicia Greenaway, Chairwoman. Our clerk is Amanda Pearson. The board is a quasi-judicial body, which means having to do with powers that are somewhat extended judicial, and those of certain federal and state boards and commissions. The board and the assessor's office are independent of each other. Our role is to review the facts presented by both parties and determine the market value of the property as of January 1st of the assessment year. The law grants presumption of correctness to the assessor. The burden is on the petitioner to provide the assessment is incorrect. Sorry, I'll read that again. The burden is on the petitioner to prove the assessment is incorrect. The hearing will be recorded and all testimony is under oath. Our clerk will ask you now to affirm testimony by raising your right hand and taking the oath.
Do it.
Each of you who will be testifying today affirm that the testimony you will give will be the truth.
I do.
Following your hearing, the board will meet to weigh the evidence and make final determination. You will be issued a written decision to which you should receive within 4 weeks. The decision is appealable to the State Board of Tax Appeal, and the notice of appeal opportunity is at the bottom of the written decision. The board is in receipt of all documentation provided by you and the assessor. We have reviewed it all.
Good. Great.
The appellant will present your case first, and then the assessor will present his case. Please begin with your present your case.
Sure. All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay. First of all, I've been doing this a long time. It's a weird feeling doing this, though, because I've probably done, in my 39 years, five of these over the phone. So if you read it, which I think you said you did, thank you. I appreciate it. I know Peter read it, and probably even Amanda read it. And so I won't bore you with details. I remember one fellow consultant asked me, how come I do so well at hearings? Because I don't read the stinking report to the board because they want to go to lunch. So I don't do that. I've never done that. There's just too much information. I don't even remember half the information sometimes because it's been a while since I've done it. So I don't want to lead anybody, including myself, down the primrose path. So I have a few remarks. And if you have later on you have any questions about the report, then fine. So I'm going to read them, and it's not all that long. Good morning. Thank you for reading the report in advance. My report is for the real estate portion only, so I want to make sure you guys do that or remind you of that. I'm not here to discuss the non-real estate items. I'm a real estate appraiser by trade. I'm not a personal property guru. I provided analyses for each of these three approaches to value. The sales comparison approach before adjustments had average sales of $48 a square foot, much lower than the assessed value of the real estate, land, and buildings, that is. The income was derived from local data and shows the assessment is high also. And finally, my replacement cost using Marshall, it's not Marshall anymore, it's whoever the other company that bought it out, but it's basically Marshall valuation, supports a reduction as well. Market data supports a reduction. In fact, the data provided is the results of actions in the marketplace. Therefore, the market shows its current real estate state. I think my report shows the assessment is on the high side. So I was able to put together a report using local data and assemble a report which you received. Pick one of my approaches. I didn't make up data. Unadjusted or unadjusted, I think the data supports the reduction. And that's basically what I want to let you know. If you guys read the report, then I'm not going to bore you with the details of it. And that's it. And then I have some comments on rebuttal for when Peter's done.
Okay. So just to clarify, so the new Marshall & Swift was bought by CoreLogic. So yeah. Most people will refer to it still as Marshall & Swift. You would agree, Mr. Lanzone?
Yeah,
okay. Okay. So just to clarify for the board, so there's no confusion. Thank you for your time this morning. So Syngenta is they're a seed provider. They do agricultural seed research, grading, treatments, things like that. They're located out in the Pasco Industrial Park up off of East Foster Wells up near Twin City Foods, Reser, the big industrial plants out in the industrial park out there. The facility was built in 2009. In our packet from the assessor's office, you can see the photos and the sketch of the facility. There's land value and land sales, and the land is not, I don't think, also under being challenged at this point. It's not in dispute. I would say the most important thing I would like you to focus on, and Mike, in our approach, is page 10 in the assessor's response. It is the industrial property valuation, the trended investment method. It pretty much, one page sums up the approach to value, the reasons this approach is selected and utilized by the counties in the state of Washington, and why it is considered, in my opinion, more valid than the other approaches that were applied by the appellant. So that, I would really like you to make sure that you focus on that document when you're looking at our information. The next page would be page 11. In Washington, personal property is confidential. So I just want you to realize that the information contained on the next two pages, or the next pages to the end of the report, are confidential and should be treated as such. Then the following page is, page 12, is a summary of the trend of investment. And it's just a breakdown of the assets and the valuation after depreciation for the different groups. On the assessor's website or the assessor's improvement value, the building and land improvements are commingled with the machinery and equipment values. We're only talking about the building and real estate values here today. But that's why it says $33 million at the bottom of the page. That includes $18 million worth of machinery and equipment and the land. Let's see here. And that's broken down to the next pages, the pages 13 through pages 36. 13 through 25 would be all the assets that were listed. Page 26 will be the building and land improvement assets broken out by themselves. And then from page 27 to 36, that will be the machinery and equipment broken out by themselves. Now, these assets were obtained from the property owner with the year built, the cost of acquisition, and then we apply a depreciation schedule based upon the type of machinery, equipment, building that it is, based upon a depreciation schedule provided by the Department of Revenue that accompanies the trended investment method information they give us annually. The trend of investment comments on page 10 explain why this is done. And it's done because it's a sound method of valuation due to the limitations of the sales and comparison and income approaches for industrial properties. These are very complex properties that are very unique, and finding very similar properties to obtain market data for is very difficult. I think in summary, the total improvement value is just about $31 million, and that includes $13 million for the buildings and land improvements, 42% of our improvement value, and 58% of the value is machinery and equipment, which is not being disputed. However, both groups of assets were valued using the trended investment method, but one group's not under appeal. So the valuation methodology is okay to value the machinery and equipment, but it's not reflective of market value of the real estate and buildings. Well, my contention is that our methodology has more merit and should be considered more reliable than the other approaches to value. So we are asking that the assessment be sustained based upon the trend of investment methodology that was applied to the property. Thank you for your time.
Very good. Ken, I didn't prepare remarks, so I try to be as extemporaneous as I can. We understand that the value of this property includes value for not only real estate, but also non-real estate. We understand that. And we also understand that the cost, in fact, I looked up what the Washington State Industrial Manual says, and it says industrial manual, and then it says printed cost. And it had nothing to do with the sales comparison for the income approach. It said trended cost. So I get that. But the cost, if it's more reliable, then it's more reliable, and it's forgetting that there's a market out there for these buildings and for the land itself. Well, the land, there was a land sale report done, so that's fine. But in terms of the overall value of the property, land and buildings, as an economic unit, I don't know how I just don't know how a printed cost could be more dispassionate than more accurate than taking a look at what other industrials have sold in the area. And I understand that you have to do a cost on machinery equipment. There's no cost there's no comparable sale per se for all those individual items of equipment. There's, several dozen pages of it. So I understand that that's what that's for. So, but for real estate, if you buy a house, how does a trended house cost work on a house? I know if you pay $50,000 for that pool, it ain't worth $50,000 credit board. Plus, it's $50,000 cost, but the value of that pool, anybody has a pool, and I don't know how many people have a pool in the state of Washington, sorry, but if you have a pool, it's trended. You don't get $50,000 trended forward to get the actual trended cost of that house. It doesn't make sense. You have to depreciate it heavily. It's not going to be the same. So, and not necessarily going to be as accurate. You'd have to make an individual adjustment for that. Same with the buildings here. And that's all that they're relying on. I don't understand why they didn't test their cost against what sales were saying. Just look around, see if there's some sales, or run an income approach on the building. So As far as it being accurate, I don't know that it's an exercise that's mandated by or allowed by law, but there's a test of value that I'm an appraiser. I wouldn't just do a trend of cost on this to arrive at what I think it's worth, and I wouldn't do that on my house either. I would find comparable sales. I would find for rental property. You could find an income for that. And that's how I would look at this. So I kind of tend to disagree. I understand why they do it the way they do it. It works. But I don't know if it's actually reflective of what's going on in the market. And as the board, Madam Chairman, said at the beginning, we're trying to get arrive at market value. I at least am providing alternatives to, arriving at the market value. So I'm hoping the board will not ignore it. And we consider both his trends, his cost, professor's cost, and at least look at mine and say, okay, it's probably, one of these got to be close to what's going on in the market, as opposed to a dispassionate, I think they're just totally dispassionate tables, which are subject to interpretation sometimes. So anyway, that's really what I'm here to tell you. I think that there was enough data to support my case. I was able to put something together. If I couldn't put something together, I wouldn't be here. So there's enough data to show that there is some room here for the board. That's it.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for listening. Also,
Peter, anything?
Okay. I would refer back to page 10 in our packet, the rationale for using the trend of investment for these properties. They're applied to industrial properties for a reason. We don't use trend of investment on residential property. I would agree that would not be applicable. The determination as an appraiser in the market is to use the approach to value that he feels or the market indicates is the most reliable indicator of value. As far as testing the assessor's costs, they're not my costs. Those are the values of those assets given to us by the property owner, depreciated by a schedule given to us by the Department of Revenue. And I am going to go through the appellant's position that he has provided market data to support his position. I can respect that, but as an appraiser, you have to look at the quality of the data and do your research to see if you can really draw conclusions from it. So one of the appellant's contentions is the Courtyard building. If you look at the appellant's cost approach, and let's see here, on page 3, the taxpayer's position of the Courtyard building, that's an 18,748 square foot building that the appellant requests we value at $25,000. This building, while it might be unique, I mean, it's integral to that facility. Thus, the trend of investment method applies to this property. But if you look at that, at $25,000, that's $1.33 a square foot in the market. So a 10 by 10 yard shed, if we're going to talk residential property, that would be $133 for a storage shed in your backyard. Does that make any sense for you for an industrial building? The permit dryer of that seed building, the permit value of the seed building that was issued by the city of Pasco was $1,032,640. The value or the indicated cost of that building is included in the assets that were given to us by the property owner. The other thing on the appellant's page 4 talks about the assessor's position that this is a full-fledged improvement. I agree. And the appellant also brings up that we have some building class errors on pages 4 and page 26. I agree, those are an error. But if you'll notice in our packet, we don't give you characteristics as to the buildings. We don't give you age. We don't give you class. We do not give you use. We do not give you heating and cooling. We do not give you wall type because it's not how we arrived at value. We arrived at value using the trend of investment method. Now, looking at the appellant's cost approach, so we're looking at his cost approach, which would be on page 3. The appellant, he combines all the square footage of all the buildings, and then he extracts. So on page 2 indicates all the building area is worth approximately 164,368 square feet, excuse me. Then he removes the dehydrator building because he says it's worth $25,000. Okay? So then if you go to his cost approach, which is on the appellant's page 56, he applies his costs to the 145,000 square feet. Okay? So that would be less the dehydrator building. Okay? And then down below it says Marshall and Swift indicates 15% overall functional, physical and functional depreciation for this building. I have added an additional 10% functional. The dehydrator is not really usable by a human because of configuration equal functional obsolescence. That's the additional 10%. Okay? So if we're going to remove the square footage on the front end, we can't apply functional depreciation to the whole facility based upon that building. It's already been removed from his equation, from his cost approach. So if you look at it the other way and say, okay, we're going to use 15% and then add in his dehydrator building at the end, that vastly changes your cost approach. Okay, so that's my one point on the cost. The sales comparison approach, I mean, the sales, sale number one, it's a potato storage shed over on East A Street. I mean, you read the information, the Pride fruit stand down towards Yakima, it includes 250 additional acres. The Wonder Bread sale up in Spokane, it's right down near the Coliseum. A commercial parking garage has been built there. You just go through the information. Sale 4 was bought by a fruit juice bottler. Since then, they have moved that second line to Walla Walla, and that property is now back on the market for $4.8 million, more than what they bought it for, and they took one of the lines out. Sale number 5, Dynamic Foods in Moses Lake. Read the sale notes. It says there's a power contract that's tied to this sale. So to take these sales, adjust them based upon no market data to come up with an overall rate and apply it to this facility using complex sales, unless you research all of them, you're not gonna be able to draw a conclusion that's reliable, in my opinion. Same thing with the income approach. We got rental comps. I mean, two of the rental comps are big Pasco warehouses that were built in 1942. This is a 2009 facility that's been built out there. Could they come in, rent this space, and use it for what they need? I would say the trend of investment method works better on this property, is more reflective of market value, especially given the data that was provided.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Mr. Lansdowne, thank you very much again. You will be receiving notice in the mail within the next 4 weeks.
Very good. Thank you.
All right, so good morning. Welcome to the Board of Equalization. Today is October 31st. The time is now 10:27. We're going to go ahead and just jump right in. We're starting with petition number BB 2019-18, parcel number 118-28128. Owner is Stephen Dean, who is representing himself today. And then we have Brian Moneymaker and Nikki Morgan representing the assessor's office here. This is a residential hearing. The petition is scheduled for 20 minutes. The appellant and the appraiser will each have 5 minutes to highlight points of the evidence they have provided. The last 10 minutes will be for rebuttal and questions from the court.
morning. Welcome to the Franklin County Board of Equalization. The board members are Gregory Garcia, Joe Crist, and myself, Alicia Greenaway Chairwoman. Our clerk is Amanda Pearson. The board is quasi-judicial body, which means having to do with the powers that are somewhat extended judicial, as those of certain federal and state boards and commissions. The board and the assessor's office are independent of each other. Our role is to review the facts presented by both parties and determine the market value of the property as of January 1st of the assessed year. The law grants presumption of correctness to the assessor. The burden is on the petitioner to prove the assessor is incorrect. The hearing is being recorded and all testimony is under oath. Our clerk will ask you now to affirm your testimony by raising your right hand and taking the oath.
Do each of you who will be testifying today affirm that the testimony you will give will be the truth?
I do.
Yes.
Following your hearing, the board will meet to weigh the evidence and make final determinations. We will issue a written decision to you, which you shall receive within 4 weeks. The decision is appealable to the State Board of Tax Appeals, and the notice of the appeal opportunity is written at the bottom of the written decision. The board is in receipt of all document data provided by you and the assessor. We have reviewed it. The appellant will present your case first, and then the assessor will present his case. Please begin with your presentation of your case.
Thank you.
I'm Steve Dean. I own the property. I'm a graduate engineer from Oregon State. I've been involved in the building trade since the 70s. In the Tri-Cities, I've built almost 100 houses. I'm still a licensed contractor and act as a consultant also. And so my engineering and work history is what I'm making my comments on. What I tried to do as quickly as I can, I'm going to follow. They had this valuation sheet, and basically the only part of it that's relative in this is the first sentence down to the word shop, and then everything that starts in on solar panels should be deleted. Then we skip to the last sentence, that first paragraph, the residence is 2600. That's a good sentence. The whole next paragraph and the first sentence of the third paragraph should all be deleted. And I'll give you a reason why. The electrical inspection for the solar system, the permit was applied for in December. The state approved part of it on January 23rd, 2019. And then Franklin PUD brought it online on March 17th. So it wasn't until March 17th that there could be power. You have pictures in your documents of the electrical panel, close-ups of the electrical stickers. You have solar system report data from January where there was no power. February, there was some field testing. March shows some testing, and then it came online March 17th. And then from there, March, April, May, and June, it ran. On July, it was cut off July 7th. There's been claims filed with the state attorney general for fraud, consumer fraud, and a whole bunch of things with Solgen Power. They have illegally trespassed by cyber intrusion onto the property to kill the system. So it's a And you can see on that report where those comments are that they'll turn it on for a day, turn it off for 2 days, turn it on for a day, and they've done that all the way through current, so the system is simply not functional. Then you have a page where the county thought that they should chase down Solgen and find out all this information from Solgen, which I'm sure they were glad to do. I have some questions, but I can't take them. We don't have enough time. But why the county thinks the solar is relevant and there's a value is beyond me. There's a page in there where Solgen provided to the county showing that they stated that they shut the system off in July. And then you can go down to, I'm skipping through, here the president says we would then go back to next year in June and see if it's up working and what have you, where he's talking to me for valuation, because he's taken his valuation based off of July. Then on September 18th, I have a letter from Peter McGinderfer, who I've never met, and he says, the last sentence, the Board of Equalization determination should be made based on property's market value as of 1/1/19 and nothing else. Therefore, anything that is in this report, in this appraisal related to the solar system is nil. It should not be included, and any valuation should go to zero. It was not operational. There wasn't even parts on the site on 1/1/19, but the appraiser doesn't want to listen to it. There is square footage changes. I thought we were going to walk down through these sheets, but I don't have time. If I go to this one, it's probably the best one. There is a line item for solar system that should be taken out entirely. There's another line item about a hot tub and a valuation of $1,500. I got a permit for that. A hot tub was never put on the property. To this day, a hot tub has never been installed on the property. I got a permit to do it, but it was never done. So that should come off of the valuation. So that doesn't even pick up the square footage errors and things that are in it.
Okay. You can have it on your rebuttal.
Okay. Okay, I'll plan to just start from there.
Okay. All right, the assessor's office.
Okay, you have our packet, and you've read through the valuation comments. The assessor's answer explains, you know, what's on the property to single-family residence with a basement, attached garage, covered front porch, large shop with a half bath and a mezzanine, and then a finished office, and then it also has the panels up on top, the solar panels, and then a small utility building. The land we value at $167,700, improvements $342,900 for a total of $510,600. Land size 3.3 acres. If you look at the overall value per square foot on the property is $110.18 per square foot. That includes all improvements in land. I did include some land sales to back up our value, and if you look at that, We have the subject valued at $50,800. I'm sorry, that'll be page number 14. Excuse me. $50,818 per acre, and the average of the eight sales that I have listed are $107,857 per acre. So that more than shows the how we are on the value of the land, and then on the improvements, if you look at page 22, these are three examples of sales from the neighborhood 211, which is where the subject parcel is located. In neighborhood 211, we're at 96% value ratio to sales in that neighborhood. And I chose three sales as an example. And always like to explain the disclaimer here. Sales comparison approach with direct comparable sales was not used to establish value. The sales were not adjusted for differences nor compared to the subject property to calculate the market value for the subject property. So I chose three sales that were similar to the subject and all being at a little above 3 acres, like the subject. And they're all older dwellings, over 40 years old. And all of them, the price per square feet is much higher than what we have for the what we have for the subject. And finally, I also want to talk about so far in 2019. We have 51 sales, and the value has increased enough that our ratio is down to 91%. So this is the sales ratio that we have. So in closing, based upon the information that has been presented in the packet, I ask that the board sustain the value.
Just to follow up as well, just with my half a minute I've got left here, the appellant mentioned that the infrastructure wasn't there on January 1st, 2019, which is our date of appraisal. It all is there. Indeed, in fact, if the bill was paid to Solgen Power, it would be turned on and it would be functioning as normal solar panels. So everything is in place. The new construction value has already been picked up and reported. And if the bill were paid in full, it would be a functioning system.
On this sheet, the slab-on-grade garage, they show it 702 square feet. It's 648 square feet. It's a correction should be made. They show the attached garage at 600 square feet. It should be 576. They show up on top, on the top line, the house was built in 55. I believe it was in 1952 over 53. They show average to good, and I think it should be downrated to fair to average. And the main reason for that is the house had no insulation in the walls and little in the roof. I've done what I can do to blow some in the walls. So in the peak of the summer, peak of the winter, it's easy to have $500 heating bills a month, because we don't have a quality insulated box. I was the first one to bring 2x6 wall construction to houses in the Tri-Cities in 1978. I know everything about insulation value and what we get. I've maximized what I can do in the attic. I've done the best I can do in the walls, and we have to live with what we have. But that makes the house as a box downgraded immensely. The next item has a average, and I'm not sure what that means, so I assume that's the same fair to average. It needs to be dropped down. The heat pump, they have it 100%. That's not correct. There's baseboard in part of the house, and the heat pump is 24 years old. It's on its last legs. The coil's leaking. I have to shut it off in the wintertime. It can't produce anything, and we have to go with the coil heat, the backup heat in it. So you can't go in there and run a heat pump at 100% valuation and pricing. Down below, we have mezzanine in the shop. It should be downgraded to fair because it's unfinished. It's not average. It's an unfinished space. And there's a yard tools utility building that's a little steel building. It was put up in the 52, 55 era. Got no thermal break in the foundation. It's a structural, it's a shed. And it should be downgraded from average to fair. There's some percentage marks up, things up above. The square foot on the garage is what is the only errors that I could find. I have a copy of that if you wanted. I didn't realize I couldn't give you a copy. And I found one sheet in an old document that had some units by cost per unit where a guy could have done the corrections, but I don't have the program to be able to run that, so I couldn't do it. But the bottom line is all the solar stuff has to be removed. I think she said the solar system was installed on January 1st. She is 100% correct. That is a total lie. And I'm really upset they're making that statement. That's a lie. That's a prosecuted lie. I'm glad it's on the record, because this is part of the stuff that needs to go to the prosecutor's office with what's going on. I want to know how many times has the appraiser's office called the concrete contractor to see what's going on, called the framer to see what's going on. I don't have time to ask him. I'd like to ask him that. But they chased down solar, somebody that's one step away from a criminal, and they're going to go get all information. It's not correct. But that's what they want to take the bank, so be it. Here's a picture of the heat pump stamp. The heat pump was put in on 7 of 95. It's 24 years old. A system normally runs 10 to 13 years. They recommend throwing it out, get another one for the efficiencies. The last point that I want to make is location, location, location. If this house was on the river, it'd be worth $1 million. If it was in a regular subdivision, maybe be somewhere in between. I'm sitting next to a commercial facility. It's a full-time commercial business with high volume traffic and noise. It has large animal deaths that you see the horse carcasses sitting on the dirt. It's got open manure storage, which creates the flies, dust, mice, skunks, raccoons, sometimes possums, and I've even had a red fox in the yard from there. We got delivery trucks coming with pet supplies, hay, pickup, drop-off animals. We got the render truck comes to drag a dead animal and drag it in.
Okay, Mr. Dean, I'm sorry.
I have two things if I could say them. They also, it's a full-time horse breeding, raising, and training facility, and a full-time dog breeding, training, and raising, as well as competitions. And those were the pictures that I showed you. And I had one disclaimer. Nothing that's in this.
Sir, we're going to have to have a chance for a
rebuttal,
and then questions from the board.
Okay. I'd also like to address the solar panels. We picked those up as new construction, which is what we do in the late spring, and so that is why they are on there. The valuation is a base valuation in addition to the new construction. Okay, so that is where that value comes out. We appraise all the properties as of the date of January 1st of this year. That is our appraisal date. New construction is part of that appraisal date, even if it was, this is all set in law, by the way. It's all set according to the RCWs. So that the new construction was then added in, and that is why it is on there, is because the law says we can add new construction up until July 31st of that year. In this case, July 31st of 2019. That is why it is in there.
And I did misspeak earlier. I was referencing the new construction date of July 31st, and I misspoke and said January 1st. I apologize. The valuation of revaluation annually is January 1st of every year, and new construction is added at its percent complete up until July 31st of each year.
I got a question. So the solar array was installed and operated for a period of time prior to July 31st?
Yes. And you have the printout through the records that they have and what I gave you. You have the solar, yeah.
You have the pages
yes.
of printout where you can see when it ran and when it didn't yes. run. That's these pages right. here, if you okay. look at those. Yeah.
Mr. Dean, I have a question. Yes. With the garage that's, they say it's 600 feet and you say it's 560 and things like that. Did you ever have them come out and remeasure?
They have been to my piece of property. I will put money on this.
Did you invite them to come out and remeasure?
He came to my property and we walked the property and then he was there before. But with this stuff getting ready for this, I went through the documents that he provided and I tried to go through and check them and I just did this in the last 2 weeks. And I had asked for all this information and the assessor's office did not provide me the information. They were a week and a half, 2 weeks dragging doing the production of my file. So that's why everything is piecemeal, because I was not provided the information timely by the assessor's office.
I just will add up that there was over communication from
documents. I mean, it's right. a couple of simple dimensions.
Yes, and the last time it was measured was in 2015 or 2016. Was the last time it was measured.
And there's no change to that. I mean, nothing's been built differently.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, it's all existed. No rooms have been changed in that house since it was originally
Chris,
built.
Do you have any questions?
You say the hot tub, you pulled a permit, but it wasn't ever installed?
Correct. Wife had some health issues and said, I don't want it.
Joe, do you have any other questions?
So the solar array has been, I guess there's some sort of problem between the installation and solar and getting it up and running. That's going to, well, I guess I don't even really understand. So as far as the state's concerned, as far as the assessor's concerned, this system is operable between now and
it could be operable today, but the appellant has not paid the bill to the power company, so they turned it off.
That's incorrect.
According to what they have provided us.
Okay, well, that's
yeah.
awesome.
Yeah, that's and that, like I said, that was a dispute between them, and that's...
Yeah, in your mind, then, the value of the property as assessed was based mostly on the changes in the current land and improvements of adjacent and then
added in with the to the solar system that is now part of the real estate.
Just one moment for clarification. My name is Peter Mackinder from the assessor of Franklin County. The RCWs and the WACs governing new construction and the placement of new construction value on the roll, RCW 3621080.
36 what?
21080. The county assessor is authorized to place any property that is increased in value due to construction or alteration for which a building permit was issued or should have been issued under Chapter 19.27, 1927A, or 29, or 1928 RCW, or other laws providing for building permits or assessment rolls for the purposes of tax levying up to August 31st of each year. The assessed valuation of the property shall be considered as of July 31st of that year. And the WAC, the other one is WAC 458-12-342. And that's a couple paragraphs, but it essentially says the same thing. And as far as any requests for information that was made from the office, the request initially made from the office from Mr. Dean was made to Brian Moneymaker on Tuesday, September 17th. And I tried to satisfy that request on the 18th, and then provided additional information on the 23rd, which includes time over a weekend. So we had approximately 4 working days. Per public disclosure laws, I have 5 days to even respond to the request. I think we've shown that we're more than willing to work with the taxpayers of our county. Additionally, if there's square footage errors, we've always been willing to make those corrections and get that corrected. But we have to have a working relationship with the property owner to be able to do that as well. So that's the only other further comments I have.
Thank you.
Thank you. My first thing I was noticing that the total rooms in my house is 5, not 6. It's only a 2-bedroom house. 2 bedrooms, bathroom, front room, kitchen, that's it. And it says that it has a vinyl siding, 100%. It doesn't. If you have a picture of what you provided, you'll see the top of the house is green. That's not vinyl siding. That's old wood. Only had so much money there. And the garage is not, it's a half a garage. I have, do you know what a common driveway is? My neighbors and I have a common driveway. If you drive up, I have half of a garage. And I think the amount of the increase on the taxes this year was almost one-third of what it was last year, because it went up by $34,000. I live, this house is on a dead-end street. There's one house next to it and then an empty railroad track. In front of it is an empty lot that the church uses for parking. It's gravel. So these other houses that they showed for comp in the neighborhood are in a much nicer neighborhood in Connell. I am in a very old part of Connell. The house is 67 years old, and I have a copy of the taxes that they sent last year, and they had to send me a correction because they put it too high, and so they put it back down. But I just think that the assessment in is just, it just went up too high. $34,000? This house is 67 years old. The compromises that they showed me on Think are a lot of brand new houses that are a lot bigger than mine in a lot nicer neighborhood that I wouldn't mind living in. But
I might add, I saw the square footage of the house. I measured it myself. It didn't come out to the same figure that they have written on their documents. I come out with 27 foot down the side and 30, just over 31 across the back.
So do you just round it off for the next one?
I'm not quite sure if they are also taking into consideration the depth of the wall as being a living space, because I measured the outside of the house. So the depth of the wall, of course, is going to be well over 6 inches each wall, which is not living space, but it may be measured that way as living space. I'm not quite clear on that. Their actual measurements on that house. I don't think it's 956 square feet, I think is what they have listed.
This was his house when he was little.
And
he bought it from his parents.
To be real frank, it was 3-bedroom at one time. Back in the 60s, we took a wall out, and it was, now it's 2-bedroom.
It has
been
2-bedroom
for a long time.
That's all I have.
All right. Good morning. My name is Nikki. We spoke on the phone briefly, so I'm just going to walk through my packet, which will answer some of your questions as I go through. So we do have the home listed as a one-story Rambler with 956 square feet. When we measure the home, we do measure the exterior of the home and round to the nearest foot.
Okay.
And that's appraisal standards in mass appraisal. And using the cost approach from Marshall and Swift, we're not going to go into each home and try to measure the interior of each wall. It's common appraisal practice to measure the outside of every home and treat everyone equitably that way. So 956 square feet. With the detached garage that we're, as they mentioned, is a shared garage. We're only valuing the 240 square feet that is on this parcel and is your half. The total rooms is more informational only. It doesn't impact value at all. The only thing that drives value there is the total square footage. If you had an additional bathroom, that would add value. But as far as total rooms in the home, it doesn't generate any value in our system. So it's informational, and I can definitely change it to 5 rooms. The vinyl finish, it's on the majority of the home, the fascia or the roof front. It's not differentiated in evaluation software. So the side of the walls is vinyl. We call that 100% vinyl. If it's a difference in fascia, which it usually is, we don't count that as a difference in our valuation software. So it is an entry-level priced home in Connell at $102,000, which, as we know, that the entry-level market in the Tri-Cities and all surrounding areas is well above 100 right now. So there's a shortage of homes on the market, which means that first-time home buyers, as well as any home buyers, anyone moving into the area, is paying more than $100,000 for a home right now. Pages 6 and 7 talk about the fact that we are required by law to be at 100% of market value. And we are an annual county, so we will follow the market depending on what the market tells us is going on. So some of what the market was telling us this year is on page 9. There were 37 sales in the city of Connell between January 1st and December 31st of 2018. So significant sales evidence to indicate that our level of assessment in Connell, and that came to 97%. So our level of assessment compared to sales is 97.21%. All the other statistics are good and within the levels that the state would expect us to be at. There's those 37 sales are listed on page 10 specifically. And then there's a map of the sales on page 11. You can see the subject is indicated with a red circle down near the bottom right. So there were plenty near the subject property that occurred. So a lot of these sales, as you can see, the year built, there are a lot of older properties that sold, as well as a significant amount of properties that were either right around 1,000 square feet or just over. And all of our levels of assessment are indicating, that median of 97%. So there are three specific comps on page 12. The sales comparison with direct comparable sales approach was not used to establish the value. These sales aren't adjusted for the difference nor compared to the subject property to calculate the value. However, they are specific examples of sales in Connell that are similar to the subject that indicate the market and what's going on there. So the first comment there under sale one is the fact that the subject price per square foot is $107.11 per square foot. And you can see that this comp number one came in at 109 per square foot. It was built in 1966. It's just over 1,000 square feet, and it doesn't have the garage. So sale number two came in significantly more per square foot than the subject, but it did have a remodel. So while it was built much earlier in 1907, it did have a recent remodel done, and it recognized more in the market. And then sale number three, built in 1971, 1360 square feet, came in at just under the sales, the assessed value price per square foot of the subject. So we treated everyone equitably. Everyone is valued based on the Marshall and Swift cost approach, and then used the same exact market adjustment to bring those to 100% or near 100% of market value.
Yes, I think that the practice of rounding things off to the highest number is wrong. One thing I got taught in grade school that if it's over 50%, then you round it up. If it's under 50%, you round it down. But in this case, I don't think rounding off is a very appropriate way to deal with it. When you're considering that I'm figuring 60 square feet less on my measurements than what they come up with. So I'm not real sure that rounding off is a good approach to take to tax collection. I just feel that we got a big enough burden with our taxes now that we don't need that. The house is a rental right now. Well, we're going to have to increase ours if they've assessed ours $34,000 above last year, that's going to up the rent.
I have a copy of my taxes from last year for my assessment, and the assessed $69,100 and then sent me a correction that it went down more to $68,000. So I think an increase of $34,400 in 1 year is a lot, considering that I'm going to be taxed for $34,000 more in a 67-year-old house. And another thing I wanted to bring up that I was sent from the Franklin County Board of Franklin County Treasurer is my house next door to me is being sold for taxes because their taxes are so high that this mother of three is now going to be homeless because she can't pay them. And that's what's happening. I'm retired. I can't pay them. I went down to get my taxes reduced. No, I had a $5 leeway, but I have a rental house, so no, you get to pay full price. And it's one of those things you get penalized for working your whole life and paying taxes and buying property. You know what I mean? I didn't get it, you know, like I didn't get free lunches for my kid. I didn't get free babysitter for my kid. I didn't get this thing called babysitter allotment back on your, on your taxes. But I paid. And now I'm being penalized because I paid. I think it just went up too much. That's all I have.
Okay. Any questions from the board? Did I not give you the Sorry.
That's okay. Just a real quick clarification on rounding to the nearest foot. I we don't round up. We round to the nearest. So 50% is up and less than 50% is down, just like all other rounding methods. And we do recognize that the percentage increase in 1 year is difficult. And so that's why we are an annual county and we try to look at sales statistically every year. But you were in our inspection area this year, and that means everybody in Connell and all the rural areas got a whole new appraisal. And when looking at the market evidence that I talked about, those 37 sales that took place, the state requires us to be at 100% of market value.
A lot of so, those
were new houses. No. Go ahead and take a look at them. So we have to be at 100% of market value, and if we're already, you know, 3% low on there, the state has written it in a way where we can't take into consideration the percentage increase in 1 year, the percentage change in 1 year. If the market were dropping, we wouldn't want it limited that way either. We're just required to be at 100% of market value, and that's where it landed this year. So if the market turns, we follow it down. We're strictly following what the market is indicating to us.
I want to thank you very much for listening to me and hearing what I think, because sometimes we don't get to vent what we think. Not everybody's interested.
Do we have any questions?
No.
But this is not in the best neighborhood in Kyle, which you would agree. It's not up on the hill with the nice, great, big, two-story new ones. Not down where I live where they call it Striker because we only could buy houses because we went on strike and finally made enough money to buy one.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
October 31st, welcome to the Board of Equalization. We're going to go ahead and start with the hearing. We're starting with petition numbers BE 2019-27 as well as BE 2019-28. Parcel numbers 113503021 and 113491152. Owner is Don and Christine Barnes. We have Mr. Barnes today. And then we also have Nikki Morgan and Benny Ho representing the assessor's office. So the petition is scheduled for 30 minutes. The appellant will and the appraiser will each have 10 minutes to highlight points of the evidence that they have provided. The last 10 minutes will
Gregory Garcia, Joe Chris, and myself, Alicia Greenaway, chairwoman. Our clerk is Amanda Pearson. The board is quasi-judicial body, which means having to do with the powers that are somewhat extended judicial, those of certain federal and state boards and commissions. The board and the assessor's office are independent of each other. Our role is to review all the facts presented by you and the assessor's office, and to determine the market value of the property as of January 1st of the assessed year. The law grants presumption of correctness to the assessor. The burden is on the petitioner to prove the assessment is incorrect. The hearing will be recorded and all testimony is under oath. Our clerk will ask you now to affirm your testimony by raising your right hand and taking the oath.
To each of you who will be testifying today, affirm that the testimony you will give will be the truth.
I do.
Following your hearing, the board will meet to weigh the evidence and make a final determination. You will receive a written decision, which you should receive within 4 weeks. The decision is appealable to the State Board of Tax Appeal, and the notice of the appeal opportunity is at the bottom of the written decision. The board is in receipt of all the documentation provided by you and the assessor's office, and we have reviewed it. The appellant will present your case first, and then the assessor's office will present her case. Please present your case.
Okay, thank you very much. I'd like to begin by thanking the staff at the Franklin County Assessor's Office for all the work they do. I spent time with Nikki on the phone. I really appreciate the difficulty of this task, the amount of properties that you have to deal with in Franklin County, the number of moving pieces, the amount of growth that we've had in the county. So I'd just like to begin by saying thank you very much for all the work that you do and for the information that you've shared with me. Just the basic, my basic position is that I believe a couple of the comparable sales that Nikki shared with me in her spreadsheet, I believe a couple of those are superior in location to the subject lots that we own with frontage on Spokane Street. And the if I look at the answer package that Nikki emailed recently to me on the map, if you look at the map, I've circled properties on the map that have direct frontage on Oregon Avenue. And in my opinion, frontage on Oregon Avenue is far superior in location to the location of our lots, which front on Spokane Street. And so, and I know there's an adjustment made, but you know, especially this lot on Oregon Avenue that's sort of at the bend of Oregon Avenue, that's a very, very prominent, very visible location for a small lot. When people are driving southbound on Oregon Avenue, before they turn in the road, they're driving directly at this property. It's directly in the line of vision, and they see it as very prominent before they make the gentle turn and continue south. The same is true if you're northbound on Oregon Avenue. As you're driving northbound on Oregon Avenue, the line of sight, this is directly at this property. It's very prominent, very visible. And I just think that that visibility, that presence, that prominent location on Oregon Avenue is far superior to the visibility, the location that we have on Spokane Street. And then if you look at the graph, the prior page in Nikki's, if you just look at that single lot where it is on this graph, it's in my opinion, I took some statistics in college, but that was so long ago that I don't remember much of that. But I just look at this graph of all of the dots, of all of the sales that are in her database for valuing our property. This single lot on Oregon Avenue, in my opinion, is a statistical outlier. I mean, it's, if you remember the little Sesame Street song that I remember when my kids were young watching TV, one of these things is not like the other. Well, I would submit to you that this lot on Oregon Avenue is not like any of the lots or any, and this is all undeveloped property. It's just not like our property. The location is far superior. And I would also argue that the other lot with frontage on Oregon Avenue is also superior, again, because of the frontage on Oregon Avenue. And this particular lot is in the, appears twice in the database, so it almost has double the impact on the values. So, again, I took the information that Nikki shared, and I tried to create, it took me a while, but I was able to recreate the spreadsheet and to put in all of the data that she had. And when I eliminated these three sales on Oregon Avenue, and then I went a step further, there were some sales in the database that do not have frontage on any hard street surface. And I think those are at the lower end of the value. So if you're going to ask the assessor to remove properties from the upper end of the values because they're not like our property, then I think it would be fair to also ask that you remove some of these from the lower end of the valuation also, because they don't have direct access to hard street surfaces. So there would be two other sales that I would eliminate that are in that category. And so when I put the numbers into the database, use the same spreadsheet approach and the same methodology, then I came to the values that I show on my appeal. And there were a couple of sales that were not included. They're in my spreadsheet. But if you go back and look at the tax parcel number, if you try to pull that up and say, I want to look at the sales history, and by the way, I really commend the assessor's office on the website, on the information, the availability of the information, and it's just really super. But this particular sale, it was a sale from the Pasco School District to JPS Investments, and they're the owner of a landscape company, and they're neighbors of our lots. But he bought a small half-acre piece of property from the Pasco School District in 2016, in March of 2016. I have a real estate excise number I can reference, but that sale was not included. And the reason it's hard to find is because subsequently he combined his lot with other lots, and so that tax parcel number went away. And so I would understand if someone searched for that sale, they're not going to find it. But anyway, so what I did was I eliminated the three sales that are on Oregon Avenue. One lot appears once, one lot appears twice. I eliminated those. I eliminated the sales of lots that had no direct access to a hard paved surface, because I think those are a comparable sale, but they're not like our property, and I think it's too subjective to try to make corrections to make them comparable to our property. So when I did that and put the numbers into the spreadsheet, I came to the values that I show, and I forwarded my spreadsheet to Amanda. I don't know if she shared that with you, but again, I appreciate the work the assessor does. But that's the basis of my appeal. I believe that the lots on Oregon Avenue are far superior in location to our lots, much more visibility to traffic, much more visibility for any business that would consider that. And then at the same time, I believe that lots that do not have frontage, direct frontage on paved streets, are far inferior to ours, and they should be eliminated as well. To be fair, you can't just eliminate the top without eliminating the bottom. And so for those reasons, and with the spreadsheet that I submitted, I believe that my proposed values would be fair and reasonable for the Franklin County assessor. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Don. Okay, so my name is Nikki, and I did prepare the packet of information for this appeal. We are speaking of two separate parcels, Zone C3 and Fry's Addition in the city of Pasco, which is over off of Oregon Avenue, as you already referenced on the map. There are aerial views and maps of the specific parcels in each specific packet. But I did want to jump right to page 7, and it's the same for both packets, so it doesn't matter which page 7 you're on. And I'd like to highlight a couple of things before I get started. There is one land size that's highlighted in yellow, the 55,000 square feet, right in the middle. Dawn did bring it to my attention that our land size was incorrect on that, and I had our GIS tech look into that. And so this is with the corrected information applied. So you have all the information for the sales. There were a couple where the appellant thought that the land size was wrong, but really there's just been a boundary line adjustment since the sale. So we have to use the size that that parcel was at the time of sale, and this was the only one that was incorrect by a little bit, which slightly changed the curve because it's valued on the price per square foot. So we'll kind of go into that in a little bit. As you can also see, I did include at standard appraisal practice to find land value. If you can, put a percentage or an adjustment amount on the influence factors, which we have done, and we took a lot of time to look into them and establish those. So right after the square footage, you have the type of influence and then the influence percentage. So you can see for some, we're removing the first one. We're removing 40% because it's a secondary lot. It doesn't front the street. It doesn't have its own individual access, but it's owned by the same person that owns the front lot. So being valued separately, we're removing some 40% of the value from those secondary lots. You can see that just under that, there are a couple that say no hard surface road access. We're removing 70% of that value off of those. If there's some that are a unique shape that would limit the ability to use that lot commercially or industrially, we're removing 40%. And vice versa, if it's on a main arterial, we're saying that those parcels are being valued 30% higher than your typical lot because it does have that frontage. And in this case, in Fry's edition, it's when they're on Oregon. So when we have our sales price, we're adjusting those sales prices to equalize them, to bring them equal to the subject. So if it has an inferiority, we're adding that 40% or 70% back onto the sales price to say if this were a normal lot, it would have sold for more. And adversely, if it's on Oregon Avenue or a main arterial, we're subtracting 30% from the sales price to bring it, so we're adjusting these to bring them equal to the subject properties. All of those adjustments are made, and then I'm using the adjusted sales price, time adjusted, at 95% of the sales price. So I'm not even shooting for 100% in this land curve. I'm shooting for a time adjusted 95% of those adjusted sales prices and developed a curve, which you can see all the information down below. So the original assessment, and I'm just going to read the short paragraph here under my charts, was based on a land size for a comparable parcel ending in 095 that has since been corrected in the assessment record. If the size was corrected in the land curve, the value of this parcel would change. The first subject parcel ending in 152 would change from 44.8, which is $2.33 a square foot, to 46.3, so it would increase in the curve. And then the second parcel ending in 201, the appellant's parcel, would change from $183,200, which is $2.11 per square foot. It would actually go down to $171,300, which is $1.97 per square foot. So just depending on where they land on the curve, the change to the curve with that land correction would make one of the appellant's parcels go up and the other go down. And then just a disclaimer, it is not recommended that the assessment of these specific parcels be changed for the following reasons. The assessment's already only based on 95% of market value when the state law recommends and requires us to be at 100%. The assessment ratio for the commercial and industrial lands, which is previous in the packet there for your review, were already low at 80% of the time-adjusted sales prices. And then the last point is just that changing these two parcels in Fry's edition would cause inequity in the assessment for the area overall. And then just in closing, I'd like to reference the Journal of Business Focus, Construction and Real Estate in the Tri-Cities publication. And they have a commercial real estate overview for the Tri-Cities. And on page 13, just says, in a 2019 report from the National Association of Realtors, prices for commercial real estate were forecast to steadily climb nationwide, though at a more modest pace than what's been seen recently. The same report predicted continued growth in the industrial sector, a field that brokers say has been booming around Oregon Avenue and Pasco, where properties have filled in around an area known as Rise Edition. So that's to have this many sales in an industrial area does indicate growth. We've had multiple building permits for additions, remodels, and new buildings in the area. It's definitely, as they coined the frame, booming. We're experiencing that. So land prices are going to continue to go up. Oh, thank you. So in the appellant's packet, the sales curve, the land curve per square foot is different, as he mentioned that he eliminated the two that were on Oregon because they're the higher end, so he eliminated the couple that were on the lower end as well. He also included some that we didn't have, and those were not valid sales, so they were invalidated in our sales pools for different reasons. So one of them was the school district sale, was a tax-exempt property, and also lower than typical. The Tupelo sale was on a bargain and sale deed, which the state requires us to remove from our sales pool. And then there were a couple others that were vacations from the city from a tax-exempt entity. So they're not allowed to be in our sales pool overall, and they were lower than what was typical in the market, or we would have added them in.
Well, it's difficult. One thing that I would like to note, if I look at the sales in a chronological sort, the way they're sort them chronologically, the sales as presented in Nikki's spreadsheet are not in chronological order, but the most recent sales in Fry's edition on a per square foot basis were 35,000 square feet for $1.42 a square foot, 45,000 square feet at $2.34 a square foot, 55,000 square feet at $1.27 a square foot. So all of these recent sales going back more than 2 years are all below what is proposed here of $241 a square foot and $2 a square foot. And again, I just feel very strongly that the influence adjustments, I don't understand how you arrive at a 30% adjustment or a 40% adjustment or I think that's just very subjective. And I think that if you can eliminate comparisons that rely heavily on subjective adjustments, then you have a sounder approach to the valuation of the properties. Again, I feel very strongly that a location directly on Oregon Avenue is far superior to locations that we enjoy on Spokane Street that are two blocks off of Oregon Avenue. The traffic there, the visibility there for any business looking to use the commercial property is just not the same. And so I would argue that, you know, I just feel very strongly that the Oregon Avenue properties should be eliminated from the pool, especially when you just look at the graph. Just looking at the graph, I'm sorry, the one property that's on Oregon Avenue is at $5 a square foot. I mean, it's clearly a statistical outlier. It just jumps off the page, more than double its nearest property that almost more, not double, from it's significantly higher than the group of similar size properties that are in the same pool. It just jumps off the page to me as a statistical outlier, and that's so. Again, I don't understand the basis. None was provided on how do you pick a 30% adjustment or a 40% adjustment or a 70% adjustment. I mean, to me that's subjective. There's no reasoning or rationale provided for selecting that number. Why isn't it 2% or 90%? Or I mean, I don't understand. But I do think it's very clear that on Oregon Avenue, that's a far superior location to Spokane Street, and that's the root argument of my, you know, the root basis for my request for using my valuation.
We do try to take into consideration all of the variances in the different properties. To eliminate those that have the issues, you can see would cut our sales pool in half if we removed all the ones that had adjustments made due to these circumstances. And adversely, I think we could continue to analyze this for years and never come to a perfect mass appraisal model that would fit for everyone. You can get into some analysis paralysis sometimes. And we do use sales to indicate what the difference is between a property that's on Oregon Avenue, as finding a similar one or a similar set that are not on Oregon Avenue, to make that 30% adjustment in this area for this year. It's different for each area. It's different for each year, depending on what the sales are indicating. And I think, on the other hand, while we do have outliers, that's common and expected. We have some that are much higher, some that are much lower. Just to say that we could jump to the appellant's curve and also say that the bargain and sale deed, the parcel near the bottom that ends in 037 to Tupelo, that was transferred on a bargain and sale deed, sold for much less than the others at 90 cents a square foot. So if we were to remove that one from this sales pool as an extreme outlier, it would also shift the curve up significantly. We have tried to find that middle ground where it makes sense to remove some sales and include others and to make adjustments where we can. And that is the curve that was used to find value for all of these properties in Fry's Addition.
Does the board have any questions?
I guess just, does your process consider outliers, or do you just throw it all in the same bucket?
No, we do research on all sales, and if we can exclude a sale for reasons provided by the state or that are just common sense, we do remove them from the sales pool when setting values. If we do a sales questionnaire and it comes back normal, we expect to see some outliers. The market indicates that some people buy emotionally and other people get a good deal. You've got to know that when you put them all in there and you exclude the ones that you can, you're going to find that curve, and the curve is what a reasonable buyer and expect to pay for a piece of property.
I have a question.
Okay.
Ms. Burns was asking, 40% to 70%, is that built into your Marshall and Swift?
No, that is based off of the land adjustments that are made. It's specific for each area for each year. And like I said, we just find a group of sales, those with the influence and those without, and try to find not a happy medium, but the same thing we do with market adjustments, where we need to apply this one number to all of these that fit this description. What will make the most of those parcels fall right in line?
Okay. So in this area, Fry's, your 40%, your 70%, your 30%, that's specific to that area, but it applied to over on Route 68, those 40%, 30%, 70% would be totally different.
They could be totally different. That is correct. These were established not just for Fry's Addition, but for the east side. All of the properties, industrial and commercial, that we did over on the east side that year.
Okay. Does that make it a little clearer?
Maybe somewhat.
I guess my question would be
mud clear.
My question would be, you do have a basis for those numbers. It's not just an assessor's
right. And some years we have more information than others, and you do start to develop a model over time of we're seeing this trend, and we see that even though there may be only one or two sales recently, we know that this is the trend in this area for those.
Thank you.
All right, we're back with the board of the
DOE decision announcements regarding BE2019-32, parcel number 113-120-211, petitioner name Sargenta Seeds. Board's decision to sustain assessor's value of $33,112,000. Sustaining number 13, trend investment method recommended by the Department of Revenue for industrial properties. Regarding petition number BE2019-18, parcel number 118-21, sorry, parcel number 118-281-128, petition name Stephen Dean. The assessor's office is going out to the property tomorrow, Friday, November 1st. We are holding off to the decision until next Thursday, November 7th. DOE decision for petition number BE2019-31, parcel number 109-831-050. Petition name is Deborah and Jerry Lewick, sorry. Board decision is to sustain the assessor value of $102,000 based with the reason of sustaining number 3. DOE decision regarding petitioner number BE2019-27, parcel number 113-503-021. Petitioner name Don and Christy Bonds. Decision to sustain assessor's value $183,200 is based for the following reason. Number 3, hold within market value. And also, we have a decision regarding petitioner number BE2019-28, parcel number 113-491-152, petitioner named Donna Christie Barnes. Board's decision to sustain assessor value